So you're from UC Berkeley. Why are you all the way out here in Massachusetts across the country?
I'm hoping to do a direct action for tomorrow, but I'm not actually sure how that's going to happen because I haven't attended the Spokes Council. But hopefully, I'm getting the vibe that it'll be cool, like the New England activists. I'm meeting them and learning a lot about how y'all operate. So it's cool, like networking and seeing what's going down here.
So why is direct action important at the debates?
It's important at the debates because there's been so much, there's been such a deconstruction of our democracy over various years. I went to the rally yesterday, and I didn't realize that...
The Nader rally?
The Nader rally yesterday at the Fleet Center at the Garden. And I didn't realize that so much has happened during the Clinton administration that's, like, worse than what happened with Reagan. I didn't even notice that. When I heard the statistics, I was, like, astounded. Like, more people incarcerated, a lot of people of color, which is important to me because I'm Filipina. So, yeah, that was really significant to me. And I think that if... It doesn't matter who wins because Al Gore is basically the Clinton administration. Bush is the Reagan administration, and it's terrible. And Nader's the guy. Nader's, like, pulling for so many different different causes. And especially in the wake of Seattle, when a lot of those organizations have come together, like the unions, the youth of color, the, you know, et cetera, like elderly people, like people concerned with the environment or welfare or healthcare.
It's interesting you have that perception because what the mainstream media tries to do with Seattle is paint it as a young youth chaotic movement that has absolutely no organization. And, you know, I was there in the streets and I saw the coalitions that you're talking about. What do you think, why do you think the mainstream media has that agenda and painting it as a young white youth thing?
I think it's another divide and conquer thing. I think the media wants to focus on, like, the white anarchists, like certain people who are... Some people might have a message and some people might be there to cause chaos, but there's a lot of people there. Like, I was part of the biggest youth of color contingent there. So, I don't know, like, try and tell me that, like, we're not organized as youth collectively, no matter what color, what sexual orientation, whatever social class. Like, try and tell me that. I've been to the meetings, I've been to the trainings, I've seen it in the streets, so.
What do you think about police... I'd say police violence since WTO against dissent in America. It seems to me that they've stepped up their agenda in squashing freedom of speech since WTO, and it seems like they're using what we considered our power in the streets of Seattle to justify their stepping up arms and spending millions of dollars on their police force to get the latest riot gear and the best chemical weapons. Do you see that happening as well?
I see police brutality being focused on not only within the police force but within the media. Like for the Democratic National Convention, a lot of the dissension was about how much police brutality. And is that the issue? How much police brutality we can tolerate? Or is it, you know, the deconstruction of our democracy over various years? It's sad. We shouldn't be focusing on that. We should be focusing on the real issue, which is why are we protesting? Why does this suck? Why isn't this a democracy? Why don't we have... power sometimes.
What are some of the issues that you're going to be protesting tomorrow at the debates?
Let's see. I think that Nader should be let into the debates, obviously. I think that the system inherently, like the commission on, presidential debates, inherently shuts out people who don't have enough money. It's a disgusting system. It's a disgusting system because it's exclusionist, and it's basically it tells me that you have to have money to be the president, and it tells me that you have to have legacy to be the president. Like in colleges, the alumni system was made out of racism. They wanted to keep Jews out of the Ivy League. So it's that same kind of system, legacy. Who's your father? Who's your relatives or whatever? It's nepotism.
So these debates aren't just about the debates for you. It's about a lot of larger issues.
It is about a lot of larger issues, and also I think I can tie it to like the prison industrial complex. Like if Bush were to be elected, how many people would he put to death, and how many of those people who are incarcerated will be youth of color, people who are victims of like the drug war, which is really a war on people of color. It's, I don't know, it's really upsetting to me because coming from California, we have a lot of prison industrial complex education, a lot of activism about that, and awesome. And so
we're getting some honks here from the cars.
I hope it's positive honks, like right on honks.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I hope so. They better be.
Me So right now we have 2 million people in prison here in the United States, and under Bush you see that just getting higher. And Gore, do you see it as both getting higher under both of them?
I see it as getting higher with the whole drug war talk. I see it becoming a reason to, for becoming justification for genocide, really. Like a war on the poor, a war on people of color, a war on youth, etc.
Were you in L.A.?
No, I wasn't in L.A., but my friends were.
Okay. Did they talk to you about one of the major issues down there for the Democratic National Convention was Gore's ties to Occidental Oil?
I've heard a little bit about that through a friend of mine who's working with cultural survival here in Boston. He expressed some concern about that, but actually I didn't hear him articulate about the issue.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's something to look towards Gore too, because he has millions of dollars invested in Occidental Oil, and they want Gore to step out of that and sell off his stock, or to use his position within Occidental, because he owns so much stock there, to pull them out of Colombia, where they're oppressing the UWA people. They want to build a pipeline across their land, and the UWA have committed to mass suicide if they in fact build this pipeline, and they've been fighting against this for several years, and that has been on their agenda as far as if the pipeline is built, they will commit mass suicide. So that's perhaps one whole society of people who will kill themselves in opposition to drilling on their land.
Wow, that really, as you just said that, because this is the first I'm really hearing like articulation about it, it reminds me of like in the Philippines, our president is Estrada, and his nickname is Erap, which is, or Erap, it's slang for buddy, because he's like this corporate whore, basically. His family is like the heads of corporations. He has lots of stock invested in these huge multi-million dollar corporations or multi-peso corporations, whatever, who are tearing up like the India land and, you know, militarism in Mindanao. It's now I see that the same thing is happening here in the first world.
And you talking about him being so close to the corporations, it just makes me realize that, you know, when we speak out against corporations here in this country, it's really a universal issue in for the whole world. It's not just a United States issue. It sounds like it's an issue for the Philippines and most likely for other developing countries as well.
Yeah, because one time I got in a debate with another student about, we were talking about capitalism and how much I hate it, basically. And he was saying, like, why are you dissing on America and using that as the model for capitalism? Because the Philippines is just as capitalistic as the U.S. But I'm like, well, who was in there, like, bombing Manila? Who was in there trying to colonize this place with, like, McDonald's, sending our people over to Nike or to the Gap for sweatshop labor and whatever? That's why the Philippines is capitalistic, because America came in there and colonized the place. And so it is worldwide, because America has colonized so many developing countries. And, you know, I'm sure you can say the same thing for, like, a bunch of other countries, Vietnam, what else? Yeah, like, a lot of, like, indigenous.
Even, like, in Eastern Europe with the Czech Republic and so on. What do you feel about Margaret Thatcher whenever she said there is no alternative to capitalism?
I think that's a bunch of shit. That's terrible. That's dystopian. That's disgusting. It's my worst nightmare come true.
What's your alternative?
Like, social and economic justice. Distributing the power economically and just being inclusive to people. Like, forming coalitions, learning other people's issues, seeing how they connect to yours. I actually became an activist because I took a sociology class in school. Not many people go to school, but, you know, I go to college. And I took a sociology class that connected a lot of the issues that my family's going through to, like, the movements here. So I don't feel like I have to move thousands of miles away to be, like, a hardcore real activist. I don't feel like I have to focus on one issue, because they all have commonalities, but at the same time, they're diverse.
Well, I wish you success tomorrow in your direct action.
Thanks.
All for WTO. So we're going to see, I'm afraid, some thin beer agenda on these debates, and I'm proud to join you in protesting this usurpation of the rights of the people during this presidential campaign season in what is supposed to be the land of the free, the land of robust debate, the land where you can speak out. And now in our most important speak out, we find ourselves with the narrow views and the two candidates who are avoiding third rail issues because they're afraid of them. They're not going to be discussed because they're afraid of them. And the result is, I'm afraid, going to be a superficial, bland debate that doesn't really get to the heart of what America cares about. I thank you for your time.
This is Phil Donahue, who just spoke here to the crowd. He's been hanging out with the Greens. Amazingly
so. Is this Tuesday? Is this the day that the candidates are debating? Why aren't we on the UMass campus today? Why have we been expelled from the UMass campus on Monday as well as Tuesday? Well, we asked this of the university administration, and they told us that the Secret Service told them they had to do this. What does this mean? It means that the state security forces have taken over a public university and told the people who normally go to school there, teach there, work there, that they cannot be present. You know, it's one thing for corporations to support a debate between two corporate candidates, and it's another thing for a public university to do so. A public university should be devoted to the free expression of ideas and not to an occasion, really, for the wealthy and the powerful to exhibit themselves in their suits and tuxedos and gowns and so forth for the press corps, and that's what this has turned out to be. Look, it's time for the elderly to relinquish the mic to the young. I'm going to give this mic to Ben Day, who will run the rest of the program. Ben is a student at UMass Boston. Ben has taken a major role, along with fellow students, many of them, in organizing this rally. Ben Day.
Well, thanks for coming to our rally to free UMass today. What's happened is that millions of dollars are being spent by the university and the state to bring this major media event to campus, while UMass Boston itself is virtually deteriorating before our eyes, visibly deteriorating. All of its facilities, like the library, are vastly underfunded. Its departments are understaffed. We have thousands of new students, but not more resources or more teachers to take care of them and to educate them. Our staff and faculty are underpaid. About half of the faculty is part-time or half-time, and that is part of the cost-cutting process that is required when you don't have money as a public university. So we're here to protest spending millions of dollars on corporate candidates, but not on working-class educations. Additionally, the campus is being shut down for 2 days, today and tomorrow. The entire peninsula on which UMass rests will not be open to the public, which means that the only space for dissent is Morrissey Boulevard, a major thoroughfare, which is not the most ideal location for protest if you don't like being run down by cars. So we think that dissent should be allowed on campus. We think it should be allowed in the debate itself. We think that alternative viewpoints have to be expressed. Dissent is fundamental to any democracy. So next I'd like to introduce another one of our faculty members here at UMass Boston, who spoke yesterday briefly at the Fleet Center at Nader's rally. His name is Larry Kay.
Thanks. Right now I should be teaching my 12:30 class, which I'd rather be doing. So at the last minute, about a week and a half ago, us faculty were told Monday would be a second cancellation day. Not only that, but we'd be prevented from being on campus, right? We're here because we can't get to our own campus. Now, what kind of message does that send?
Right.
Secret Service said, well, you have to seal off campus for 2 days. UMass said, okay, it's done, right? So what does that say about how the UMass administration thinks of us faculty and students, right? There's absolutely no respect there. They don't respect us as people. They don't respect the educational process. They'll happily shut down the institution to run some corporate media event. So, and just think of what would happen. Suppose the debate were being held at Harvard. You think Harvard would have been sealed off for 2 days?
Right.
No way. No, things would go on as normal there. So what we're dealing with in the elitist administration here that doesn't really respect us as students and faculty, doesn't respect the educational process. So I'd just like you to think, if they don't respect us, why should we respect them? Of course not. They told us there's nothing we can do, and government told us to do it, we're doing it. You don't matter.
Thanks, Larry. I'm just stepping in here for a second. The police have asked us just to move away from the edge of the street a little bit, give people room to move by, and we'll be cool.